This has been your experience. This has been my experience. And this has been Max Lucado's experience. Here I sit in the waiting room. The receptionist took my name, recorded my insurance data, and gestured to a chair. Please have a seat. We'll call you when the doctor is ready. I look around. A mother holds a sleeping baby. A fella dressed in a suit thumbs through Time magazine. A woman with a newspaper looks at her watch and sighs and continues the task of the hour. Waiting. The waiting room. Not the examination room, that's down the hall. And not the consultation room, that's on the other side of the wall. Not the treatment room. Exams and consultations and treatments all come later. The task at hand is the name of the room. The waiting room. We in the waiting room understand our assignment, to wait. We don't treat each other. I don't ask the nurse for a stethoscope or a blood pressure cuff. I don't pull up the chair next to the woman with a newspaper and say, tell me, what prescriptions are you taking? That's the job of the nurse. My job is to wait, so I do. Can't say that I like it. Time moves like an Alaskan glacier. The clock ticks every 5 minutes, not every second. Somebody press the pause button. Life in slow-mo. We simply don't like to wait. We are the giddy-up generation. We weave through traffic looking for the faster lane. Down in Tijuana, our driver had to weave through lanes, 10 lanes of traffic getting to the Mexican border as it got down to 2. We frown at the person who takes 11 items to the 10-item express checkout. We drum our fingers when the video downloads or the microwave heats our coffee. Come on, come on. We want six-pack abs in 10 minutes and minute rice in 30 seconds. We don't like to wait. Not on the doctor, not on the traffic, not on pizza, not on God. Take a moment and look around you. Do you realize where we sit? This planet is God's waiting room. The young couple in the corner waiting to get pregnant. The fellow with the briefcase, he has resumes all over the country waiting on work. The elderly woman with a cane, a widow, been waiting a year for one tearless day, waiting on God to give, to heal, to help, waiting on God to come. We indwell the land betwixt prayer offered and prayer answered, the land of waiting. Max comments, if anyone knew the furniture of God's waiting room, it was Joseph. Our problem with reading his story is its brevity. We can read the Genesis account in less than an hour, which gives the impression that all these challenges took place before breakfast one morning. We'd be wiser to pace our reading over a couple of decades. Take chapter 37 into a dry cistern and sit there for a couple of hours while the sun beats down. Recite the first verses of Genesis 39 over and over again for a couple of months. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Joseph needed at least that much time to walk the 750 miles from Dothan to Thebes. And then there was a day or days or weeks on the auction block, probably a decade in Potiphar's house, supervising the servants, doing his master's bidding, learning Egyptian. Tick tock. Tick tock. Tick tock. Time moves slowly in a foreign land, and time stands still in prison. Joseph had asked the butler to put in a good word for him. Genesis 40:14, remember me when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. I've done nothing here that they should put me into this dungeon. You could almost hear the butler reply, certainly I'll remember you to Pharaoh. First chance I get, you'll be hearing from me. And Joseph probably hurried back to his cell and collected his belongings. He wanted to be ready when the call came. A day passed, then two, then a week, then a month, 6 months. No word. As it turned out, Pharaoh's butler, quote, did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. On the page of your Bible, the uninked space between that verse and the very next is scarcely wider than a hair ribbon, and it only takes your eyes a split second to see it. Yet it took Joseph 2 years to experience it. Chapter 41 starts like this. 2 years passed, and Pharaoh had a dream. 2 years, 24 months of silence. 104 weeks of waiting, 730 days of wondering, and 2,190 meals alone, 17,520 hours of listening for God, yet hearing nothing but silence. Plenty of time to get bitter or cynical or angry. Folks have given up on God for lesser reasons in shorter times. Not Joseph. On a day that began like any other, he heard a stirring at the dungeon entrance. Loud, impatient voices demanded, "We're here for the Hebrew. Hurry, get up. Pharaoh wants the Hebrew." And Joseph looked up from his corner to see the prison master, white-faced, stammering, come on, get up, hurry. Two guards from the court were on his heels, and Joseph remembered them from his days in Potiphar's house. They took him by the elbows and they marched him out of the hole, and he squinted at the brilliant sunlight. They walked him across the courtyard into a room, and attendants flocked around him, and they removed his soiled clothing, and they washed his body and shaved his beard, and they dressed him in a white robe and new sandals, and the guards reappeared and walked him into the throne room. And so it was that Joseph and Pharaoh looked into each other's eyes for the first time. Dreams had kept Pharaoh up all night. In dream number one, cows grazed on the riverbank. Seven were fine. They were fat prime candidates for a Chick-fil-A commercial. But while the healthy bovines weren't looking, seven skinny-looking cows sneaked up from behind and devoured them. And Pharaoh woke up in a sweat. Dream number two was just as bothersome. A stalk of grain with seven healthy heads was consumed by a stalk of grain with seven withered heads. The two dreams with the seven same pattern. Seven bad devoured seven good. Pharaoh was upset. The prisoner was unfazed. Joseph heard the dreams, and he went straight to work. No need to consult advisors or tea leaves. This was simple stuff, like basic multiplication for a Harvard math professor. Expect 7 years of plenty, then 7 years of famine. Now, famine was a foul word in the Egyptian dictionary. The nation didn't manufacture Chevys or sell T-shirts. Their civilization was built on farms. Crops made Egypt the jewel of the Nile. agriculture made Pharaoh the most powerful man in the world, and a month-long drought would have hurt the economy. A year-long famine would weaken the throne of Pharaoh, who owned the fields around the Nile. A seven-year famine would turn the Nile into the creek and the crops into sticks. Apocalypse. The silence on the throne room was so thick you could hear a cough drop. Joseph took advantage of the pause in conversation to offer a solution. Create a Department of Agriculture and commission a smart person to gather grain in the good years and distribute it in the lean years. Officials gulped at Joseph's chutzpah. It was one thing to offer bad news to Pharaoh, and it was another to offer unsolicited advice. Yet this guy hadn't shown a hint of fear since he entered the palace. He paid no homage to the king. He didn't offer accolades to the magicians, and he didn't kiss rings or polish apples. Lesser men would have cowered, but Joseph didn't blink. Again, the contrast. Here was the most powerful person in the room, Pharaoh, ruler of the Nile, deity of the heavens, grand poopah of the pyramid people, sweating. And the lowest person in pecking order, Joseph, a slave, convict, accused sex offender, he was cooler than the other side of the pillow. What made the difference? Ballast. Joseph's life was built on a foundation. It was anchored on the deep-seated, stabilizing belief in God's sovereignty, like the Ray Bolt song we enjoy hearing, "The Anchor Holds." How true. We sense Joseph's belief in his first sentence, Genesis 41:16. "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace." The second time Joseph spoke, he explained, "God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do." Joseph provided and proceeded to interpret the dreams and then tell Pharaoh that his dreams were established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Four times in three verses, Joseph makes reference to God. 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 In other words, Joseph emerged from his prison cell bragging on God. Jail time didn't devastate his faith. It deepened it. And you? You aren't in prison, but you may be infertile or inactive or in limbo or in between jobs or in search of health and hope, a house or a spouse. Are you in God's waiting room? If so, here's what you need to know. While you wait, God is working. "My Father is always at his work," Jesus said in John 5:17. God never twiddles his thumb. He never stops. He takes no vacation. He rested on the seventh day of creation, but got back to work on the eighth, and he hasn't stopped since. Just because you are idle, don't assume God is. Joseph's story appeared to stall out in chapter 40, and our hero is here in shackles. The train was off the track. History was in a holding pattern. But while Joseph was waiting, God was working. He assembled the characters. God placed the butler in Joseph's care. He stirred the sleep of a king with odd dreams. He confused Pharaoh's counselors. And at just the right time, God called Joseph to duty. He's working for you as well. Be still. Know that I am God. It's on the cover of your bulletin. And it's the same sign as on God's waiting room wall. And you can be glad, because as Anne said, God is good all the time. You can be still because he is active. You can be at rest because he is busy. To wait, biblically speaking, is not to assume the worst or worry or fret or make demands or try to take control. Nor is waiting inactivity. Waiting is a sustained effort to stay focused on God through prayer and belief. Psalm 37:7, to wait is to rest in the Lord, to wait patiently for him, and to not fret. Max Lucado confesses, waiting is easier said than done. It doesn't come easy for me. I've been in a hurry all my life, hurrying to school, hurrying to finish homework, pedal faster, drive quicker. I used to put my wristwatch face on the inside of my arm so I wouldn't waste the millisecond it took to turn my wrist. What sanity! I wonder if I could have obeyed God's ancient command to keep the Sabbath holy, to slow life to a crawl for 24 hours. The Sabbath was created for frantic souls like me, people who need this weekly reminder, the world will not stop if you do. And what of the command in Exodus, 3 times a year, all your men are to appear before the sovereign Lord, the God of Israel. I will drive out nations before you. I will enlarge your territory. No one will covet your land when you go up 3 times each year to appear before the Lord your God. God instructed the promised land settlers to stop their work 3 times a year and gather for worship. And all commerce and industry, government came to a halt while the people assembled. Can you imagine this happening today? Our country would be utterly defenseless. Yet God promised them to protect their territory. No one would encroach on the Israelites, and what's more, they wouldn't even desire to do so. No one will covet your land. And God used the pilgrimage to teach the people this principle. If you will wait in worship, I will work for you. Daniel did this. In one of the most dramatic examples of waiting in the Bible, this Old Testament prophet kept his mind on God for an extended period. His people had been oppressed for almost 70 years. And Daniel entered into a time of prayer on their behalf. And for 21 days, he abstained from pleasant food and meat and wine. He labored in prayer. He persisted. He pleaded. He agonized. No response. And then on the 22nd day, a breakthrough. An angel of the Lord appeared. He revealed to Daniel the reason for the long delay. Daniel's prayer was heard on the very first day it was offered, and the angel had been dispatched with a response. Quote, that very day I was sent here to meet you, but for 21 days the mighty evil spirit who overrules the kingdom of Persia blocked my way. And then Michael, one of the top officers of the heavenly army, came to help me, so I was able to break through these spirit rulers of Persia. Daniel 10:12. From an earthly perspective, nothing was happening. Daniel's prayers were being like pebbles dropped on hard ground. But from a heavenly perspective, a battle was raging in the heavens. Two angels were engaged in fierce combat for 3 weeks, and while Daniel was waiting, God was working. What if Daniel had given up, you know, lost faith, walked out on God? Better question, what if you give up, lose faith, or walk away? Don't. For heaven's sake, never give up. All of heaven is warring on your behalf. Above and around you at this very instant, God's messengers are at work. Keep waiting. Those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. What a promise. Fresh strength, renewed vigor, legs that don't grow weary. Delight yourself in God, and He will bring rest to your soul. You'll get through this waiting room season just fine. Pay careful note, and you'll detect the most wonderful surprise. The doctor will step out of his office and take a seat next to yours. Just thought I'd keep you company while you're waiting. Not every physician will do that, but yours will. After all, he is the great physician. Selah.